Dan Boehner, you would probably more instantly recognize as a member of the very, very successful Becky Buller Band. Dan also runs the program at the Eastern Tennessee State University for Bluegrass Country, Celtic, Old-Time Music. Really great program. Dan also, he's such a busy guy, has a brand new song out entitled West of West Virginia. We're going to talk about all those things. He's a busy fellow, a fascinating guy. You're going to want to learn about the program at East Tennessee State University, its heritage, what it's accomplishing now and what it's going to accomplish in the future, which is all good for this very, very special bluegrass music. West of West Virginia, we're going to talk about that song and what it means to Dan personally on a very personal level. There's a video that describes a little bit. Dan's going to talk about that. I'm really happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass Dan Boehner, who many of the listeners might know you, Dan, first and foremost from the very, very fine band, the Becky Buller Band. But Dan, I want you to describe the program at East Tennessee State University. It's the Bluegrass Old Time and Country Music Program. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk a little bit about a new single that I caught just about a week ago, West of West Virginia. But Dan Boehner, welcome, man. So nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Steve. I'm first of all, it's a pleasure to be on your show today. I'm glad to get to talk to your listeners, and I guess the last time I saw you was at the IBMA boardroom, so good to catch up with you.
I know. Well, you're a busy guy. For the people that know, Dan serves, that was another credential, he serves on the IBMA board, and Dan puts a lot of time and a lot of effort into programs that serve the community as a whole, and is always busy, and after our board meetings, I wanted to catch you down there, Dan, and the new single, West of West Virginia, thought made me remember that. I should have done that then, so I'm doing it now, but you're
well,
very
active.
Well, you
know, I didn't even have it out or even noticeably available at IBMA. I kind of wanted to not make that part of IBMA. I wanted to wait till it was all done and where it wouldn't get caught up in the mix of everything going on there. But I'm glad that you're interested. And I tell you, there are not a lot of songs that mean as much to me right now as that song, West of West Virginia, because my dad's family, my dad's from West Virginia, and my grandfather, he just turned 85 a week ago,
wow.
And he still lives there. My grandfather was a miner for 39 years, a coal miner, and they lived at the head of a holler, right in the middle of West Virginia, right at the corner of Clay, Fayette, Kanoa, and Nicholas counties, right in the middle of coal country.
Mm.
And my dad grew up going to a one-room schoolhouse until 1966, the last one-room schoolhouse in the state. And the conditions there were so primitive. And, I mean, they were only, as a crow flies, 35 miles away from Charleston, West Virginia. But it might as well have been 2,000 miles away. Because
it's just inaccessible.
They had no running water, no plumbing, none of the modern conveniences there. And the school teacher who taught, she had to drive in a Jeep with chains on the back of it just to get there. And if it rained, she had to make sure the chains were on the Jeep just so she could get there to teach the kids.
Wow.
And, it's really a bizarre situation. That a place so close to the state capital was so neglected and so it's a story. You know, Tim Stafford and Terry Heard wrote the song. I think it was Terry's idea, and then he and Tim got together and elaborated on it. But it speaks to my family.
It really
so much.
Does. It seems to resonate with you, and I know this from not just you telling me now, but there's a video that kind of accompanies the release of this. Where is that actually you're driving back home?
Yeah, I'm driving into West Virginia, and I interviewed my grandfather and my dad. My dad came down for it. My dad lives in New Jersey. See, he moved out of West Virginia when he was 18 because he didn't want to be a coal miner or a logger.
Yeah.
And years later, his brother was killed logging accident when he was 34 years old. I remember that well. It was like 1998. And then another cousin, maybe a year before that, like a third cousin, he was killed in the mines. He got pinned to the ceiling of a mine.
Wow.
With a pinning machine, and you know, just awful conditions down there, working conditions. And of course, my grandfather, he has black lung, and even though he's worked hard all his life, and he has farmed, and he's a strong man, and he eats from the garden. He doesn't eat processed foods. He's as healthy as you can imagine, except that dang black lung is negative, where he's deteriorating.
And that's still a thing today. I mean, I've talked to people from that area still, and it's like, yeah, it still happens. I mean, you think it's something yesterday with the black and white photos and the guy, but it's still a present thing now.
It sure is. And what are the other options for people?
There aren't any.
Aren't as many options. Yeah.
Logging, if that's available, which is equally dangerous, as you know. But, I mean, yeah, a lot of times mining is it. The idea is do something else. Well, there's nothing else to do.
Yeah, yeah. And you can't fault the people for wanting to make a living.
No.
But at any rate, my dad moved away in 1974, and he moved up and met my mom, and my dad became a machinist and later a pastor, but he doesn't get paid for being a pastor. He just does it because he wants to.
Yeah.
A Baptist church. He's done that for 25 years. But machinist is his trade, and he wanted my brother and my sister and I to get education. Then I moved to East Tennessee State and got my degree in music education while also participating in bluegrass, old-time, and country music. And then I just stayed because I loved the program so much, and was hired, and eventually was hired as assistant director. And then when my predecessor Raymond McLean left, I became the director of the program back in 2010.
Dan, if you are following in the footsteps of Raymond McLean, who is known on this program as I play his music in the McLean Family Band, those are good steps to follow into, because I don't know of anybody more equipped than Raymond McLean to demonstrate all those kinds of music.
Raymond can play every instrument well. Yep. Like, he is one of the finest musicians you'll ever meet, and sometimes people don't know it because he's so thoughtful with his music, and he's so giving with his time to other people. But
he's not a real showy guy.
Well, he's a good entertainer, but he never, he will opt to do whatever's tasteful versus bowling you over what he is able to do. But I have seen him play some amazing things on an instrument that would rival anything that anyone does. He's really an incredible musician. And I worked with him for 10 years. I also worked with Jack Tottle, who founded our program.
Yeah, that's right.
Jack Tottle had a number one mandolin instruction book for many, many years.
I have it. I own it.
Yeah. It's a good book. And I believe, Jack gave Bela Fleck and Pat Enright and Mark Satz the first professional jobs on Rounder Records with Tasty Licks back in the 70s.
Oh, yeah, man.
And then he moved here after he was done touring and started the program here. In those early days of the program, we had people like Tim Stafford, Barry Bales, Kenny Chesney, Tim Stafford, Beth Stevens, the McCarter's sister, Jennifer McCarter.
Mm-hmm.
And Becky Buller.
It's an amazing program, and I love hearing you talk about it because of the enthusiasm. I mean, people can find this is cool too on Facebook or YouTube. There's every once in a while you put out a little video of some of your students, and it just nails it right down the pike of bluegrass music from all of your students at ETSU, and it's really good stuff.
Well, a lot of those are not planned. We'll be in a band rehearsal and something just feels good, and we're like, hey, let's put it on Facebook Live. And some of those videos are up around 80,000 views now, people, and thousands of shares. And anybody who wants to find out more can check out our pages. We have the ETSU Bluegrass Old Time and Country Music Studies Facebook page, and also there's an alumni and friends page where if you're an ETSU alum, you can post where you're going to be, and we'll be happy to help share your new music if you've got a new record coming out.
It must be a full-time. And now you actually, as I understand it now, because of work you've done, you can actually obtain a bachelor's degree in that very program.
Yes. Raymond and Jack and I, we worked through the second, from like 2007 until it was launched in 2010. On the world's first ever Bachelor of Arts degree in Bluegrass, Old Time, and Country Music Studies. There were some universities and colleges that were offering bluegrass music, or some you could get a Bachelor of Music with an emphasis in bluegrass. But we thought that really our students don't want to study you know, Mozart and Bach and Brahms, and then take a little bit of bluegrass.
Right.
We wanted all of our history courses to pertain to this music that we love and how it relates to other American music forms, how it relates to old-time music and country music. So we developed these series of history courses, and the faculty here continue to develop those. We also have music theory as it relates to these styles of music, because we communicate musical ideas differently. Jazz musicians and classical musicians communicate differently. You know, we're still playing chords, but we talk about them differently. And bluegrass musicians, we have a whole set of terminologies that we have developed and use, and so we want to be true to that. And we also, one of the coolest things we have here is we have about a $750,000 recording studio where we do produce records, and we teach record production for musicians, recording engineering for musicians. And we've had some good success. One of our latest singles, well, it was released last year around Halloween, was Sam Jocelyn's Ghost.
That's right. I've played
and that one charted pretty well.
I
and
did.
We had another song before that chart, and have a new old-time record that's coming out. We'll have to send you one, Steve.
I will look for it. And the other thing, and I'm talking to Dan Boner, if you're just tuning in. So you get these young students, you get these students that come in who not only yearn and learn, actually, that's not a bad phrase, they yearn and learn from you and this program that's available and all the fine teachers that you have. They learn the music, and they also learn the history. I bet a lot of your time is spent, because some of them are so young, maybe they don't connect. You and I remember the old days. I may be more than you because I'm older, but you're able to put all this history of the origins of bluegrass, which is not that far away for any of us still. So you're able to put that in their mind, and they probably get to listen to a lot of great music. So you teach them music and music theory as it applies to the music that you're playing there, and you also get to just put a lot of great memories and history in their mind so they can carry it forward if they choose to.
Yeah, and, you know, talking about the older generations of musicians, you know, the one thing that I think is hard to convey, and I think about this one a lot, when you talk about Bill Monroe, you know, when we saw Bill Monroe and experienced Bill at our age, you know, when he was around, he had this mythological status, you know, among all of us, and he still kind of does, but... You know, my students are now, this year they're coming in born in 2000. So so they missed actually experiencing that. And I remember just the stories of Bill Monroe picking up his entire band. And Raymond McLean told me a story at Bean Blossom. Somebody cut a tree down across the road. And Raymond was right there and watched Bill pick it up on his shoulders.
He's become like Paul Bunyan in those physical things that he did.
and that toughness of his music, and you hear that attitude in his music. So a little bit of that has been lost. But fortunately, we have people who can talk about those days and their experiences. You know, we have a guest artist seminar that we do. We probably bring in about 6 or 7 guest artists a semester, and they can, you know, they talk about their various areas of how they work in the music, and some of them will reflect on their time working in Bill Monroe's band or whatever it may
be.
That's
that one degree of separation. You can still provide that, you know, even like you're saying, students that are born in 2000 and they don't have that, you know, let's say hands-on or eyes-on experience you or I may have. There's still just that one degree of separation where you can still connect it, and it still has to mean a lot to them to know they're looking at someone, talking to someone who played with the founders of the music.
Well, yes, but also it surprises me constantly how well-informed our students are already without us having to tell them anything. Like, I'll give you an example. Lincoln Hensley, one of my students, he's from 20 minutes away from school. So he grew up in Unicoi County, Tennessee, in Irwin, Tennessee, in the mountains, and he's been learning really traditional bluegrass since he was young, and he's just eat up with it, you know, the really hardcore stuff. He may be the only person his age on the planet that knows every single Sonny Osborne break and back up and lick.
I knew that's where you were going, because I know that Sonny's a big fan of his.
Yeah, he and Lincoln had become good buddies, and I think Sonny's been producing a record for Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Even Lincoln is a good resource, and our students teach us, and the students can share their knowledge with the class that they're in. So it's not just a top-down, we're dictating what the history of bluegrass is. It's a thing that the students can participate in as well. And we have right now, we counted up just this semester, we have about 18 current students, majors and minors, who are performing professionally on the road with good bands. And so because of that, we tend to not have classes on Fridays or early on Mondays. That way if students need to go out and tour, they can, or faculty. We've got still people on the staff and faculty like Adam Steffi and Wyatt Rice, Hunter Berry and Sally Berry.
Can you imagine? I can't imagine being a kid. And of course, I'm not a kid by a long shot, but I can't imagine being a kid.
Stop there. That says it all.
And going to college and having Adam Steffi and Hunter Berry and Tim and all these people there to teach me this music. I know they appreciate it, but man, oh man, what a wonderful gift you can give them. And of course, they give back, as you say, but that's just amazing that they can go and learn from these great, great players.
Well, it's really a special place we have here at East Tennessee State University, and we're so proud that we have the support of our administration. We've been doing it now for, 36, 37, 38, I forget how many years, since 1982. And I think one of the unique features of how our program is positioned, we actually created a Department of Appalachian Studies. Because Appalachian Studies has been important to the university here, going back to the 60s and 70s with some of the early Appalachian scholars and writers and researchers. And so we had a Center for Appalachian Studies that Bluegrass actually became a part of starting about 1999.
Yeah.
And so we're in the Department of Appalachian Studies. The students can study this music in context to the region, to the religion, the even the food of this region.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, the people of the region, we're talking about coal mining earlier, and we have environmental studies courses in Appalachian Studies and a course called Coal Mining in Appalachia. So and I should mention too, we have a master's degree in Appalachian Studies, so a lot of our students who've graduated with the Bachelor of Arts go on and get graduate degrees in Appalachian Studies as well.
That's
really a special place to be. We're 30 minutes from the birthplace of country music in Bristol. So, yeah.
It's just an amazing, and I've heard you talk about it before, but every time you do talk about this program, Dan, it's just, to me, it's just more and more like I want to go there. I think I'm too old to get in, and I'm probably not good enough.
You need to come visit us at least.
I have to do that. I absolutely have to do that, spin down there. So I'm not that far away. I need to do that. Well, we've talked about West of West Virginia, your new single, what it means to you. We've talked about East Tennessee State University. Off the air, we talked a little bit about the Becky Buller Band, and I want people I know you're out with them as much as you can be, and we talked a little bit about it on the air, but that's a special band, I'll just tell you.
Yeah.
From my point of view, and from I think all the fans agree that the Becky Buller Band is one of those, that's one of those bands you're going to be talking about in the next issue of the
Becky,
program. Yeah.
I met Becky at ETSU. She was a senior, and I was incoming as a freshman. So we overlapped 1 year, and at that point, you just notice people. She was a good example for me and for those of us who were just coming in, because she was a student who, she was right on the edge of graduating, and she had already been doing things. She already won the Chris Dawson Songwriters Contest, Merle Fest, and she was playing with Appalachian Trail and touring, and she was just about ready to start going out with Valerie Smith and working for Bell Buckle Records.
Yeah.
And she was always working. She always had her mind set on something that she wanted to do with her music. And it so impressed me. And we were on a few recordings together, that spring in 2001. And then we stayed in touch over the years and tried to always include her. She actually played on my gospel album back in 2007, did a live gospel album. And she was one of the first people I thought of to bring onto that. And, you know, I'll be totally honest. When you work in administration in any type of job, you kind of get your you have to do a lot of work that isn't the fun stuff. You know, you know, in order to make it possible for the teachers to have what they need and the staff to have what they need, it requires paperwork from me and emails and all this behind the scenes stuff. And
right.
I'll never forget, it was, and of course I did a lot with the Bluegrass Pride Band, took them on tours of Japan and other countries and festivals and whatnot. But at one point around 2014-15, I was sitting in my office one night, and I think it was like a Friday evening, probably like 10 o'clock at night. And I thought to myself, man, I sure would like to play music for myself a little more, because I just felt a little bit like I needed that, you know. And so many of us who started out as musicians, we end up doing things that don't require you to have a banjo or a fiddle or a mandolin or a guitar in your hand.
Right.
And yeah. I was kind of wanting that. So out of the blue, Becky called me and she said, of course, I knew she had a new record out and I had congratulated her on that. But she said, I'm doing a performance up in Minnesota. We're playing Mabatma and my hometown, and would you want to play guitar for it? And I said, yeah, I'm there. I'll do it. And so we went out, and it was Ned and Beth Lawrence on bass, and we had to learn. Oh, and Jenny Lynn Gardner was filling in on mandolin,
yeah,
because
sure.
There was a big blizzard in Nashville. It was like 14 inches of snow or something. We couldn't get our mandolin player. Anyway, we ended up going up there and playing, and I just remember preparing for that for weeks, because Becky's music is not easy. It's not your 1-4-5 no. G, C, and D and predictable. It is not predictable at all. And, you know, she'll do little things, like she'll write one chorus that's a little different from everyone else, and you've got to remember where that change is and how it happens. There's one song we kick off the show with, Nothing to You, and there's one F chord in it during the fiddle breaks. There's nowhere else in the whole song that there's an F chord, and you just got
to
be ready for
it.
And yeah, and every song is that way, and her lyrics are interesting. And so, you know, we did that run, and then she asked me to do a few more, and before we knew it, we were in a band together. So I've been very I feel very fortunate to do that.
There aren't a lot of people
I want to go out on the road mm-hmm. and be exhausted with, and Becky and Ned and Nate Lee and mm-hmm. Dwayne Anderson and CJ, our sound band.
It's a great band, and I would just wish, just between you and me, if you could just get Becky to be a little happier.
And if we could get Ned to be a little more serious.
That's right, that's right. I love the band, I love what you guys do. Man, I'm so thrilled to get a chance to talk to you about the program at East Tennessee State, because I know it's so vital, and I know you put so much effort and your heart into it, and that's the reason it's producing such great results. I'm just thrilled for you and the whole program.
Well, I appreciate that, Steve. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, too, that it's bluegrass, old-time
country
and Celtic music.
Oh, I didn't pick up the Celtic part.
Yeah, it's not part of the title, but it's part of our Appalachian and Scottish and Irish studies here.
Well, they're all connected.
And,
we could do shows on that connection. We could just do shows on how that all stems together.
Absolutely, and I've got some people here that could tell you all about it. Dr. Jane McMorrin, she leads a study abroad to Scotland and Ireland. She's a champion fiddler, Scottish fiddler from years back, and she does a great job directing that end of the program. So, again, there's a lot here at East Tennessee State for anybody who's interested in the academic study. And, you know, they can major in anything. It's a state institution. They can major in biology or whatever they'd like. And then minor in bluegrass. We have out-of-state scholarships that would allow students to attend at the in-state rate. Huge savings. And as a regional state institution, it's pretty affordable compared to private schools and other options.
I think it's a great place, and I've heard you talk about it before, and like I said, I wish I could go, but I don't think it's going to happen for me. But I will visit. I will come down and visit when you're in session sometime just to say hi.
Well, I want you to come here, Steve, and tell everybody about, you know, what you're doing in radio broadcasting and how the industry and the platform has changed. It's ever-changing, especially now with the technologies.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly.
There's a lot to know about that. You could share that with
I would
with
be
our students.
I'd be happy to share it. I'd be happy to do it. To the extent that I know it, I'll share everything I've got.
Awesome.
Hey, Dan Boner, thanks, man. I appreciate you being available for Unreal Bluegrass, and thanks for everything that you do for the music and for the IBMA board, and you're just getting started, man.
Thank you so much, Steve. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
See you, bye.